The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Thursday, December the 7th, 2017. I'm Mike Clifford. President Trump makes good on a campaign pledge to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Also on our rundown, Georgia recognized as a national leader in the care of youth in foster care, and some perspective from the Lone Star State on the long road to recovery from Hurricane Harvey. Topping our news in the wake of President Donald Trump's announcement Wednesday that the U.S. would recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, we get word from the Jerusalem Post that the U.S. is now asking Israel to temper its response to the move because Washington expects a backlash and is weighing potential threats to U.S. facilities and people. That's according to a State Department document seen by Reuters. In a White House speech announcing the change, Trump said it was the right thing to do. The New York Times reports Palestinians burned photos of Trump in Gaza in response to the move. Folks from Colorado are joining a National Day of Action today, calling on Congress to block the FCC's plans to overturn Obama-era rules that treat the internet like a utility.
Caroline Fry with Colorado Common Cause says net neutrality rules prevent internet service providers such as Comcast or Verizon from blocking or slowing down consumer access to websites and ensure that all online content is treated the same.
If I go and try to access my friend's website where she sells custom-made sweaters, I should be able to access her website in the same way that I'm able to go online to Amazon and buy a new toaster.
FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, a former lawyer for Verizon, claims regulating the internet as a utility has slowed investment in broadband networks. In Denver, supporters of net neutrality are set to gather at Colorado U.S. Senator Cory Gardner's office today and at Skyline Park on Saturday. Events are also planned in Boulder, Colorado Springs, Durango, Estes Park, Fort Collins, Pueblo, Salida, Trinidad, and Westminster. I'm Eric Galatis.
Nearly 4 million people submitted comments in favor of net neutrality, and according to a recent survey, almost 80% of Americans want the rules kept in place. Meantime, Andrea Sears tells us community organizers say they have twice the number of signatures they need to put paid family leave and a $15 minimum wage on next year's ballot in Massachusetts.
The grassroots effort gathered almost 275,000 signatures from 346 of the 351 towns and cities in Massachusetts. Andrew Farnitano with Raise Up Massachusetts, the coalition supporting the effort, says the numbers show that past successes in raising wages for workers have benefited everyone in the state.
I think people in Massachusetts realize that, and they realize that these are common sense things we can do to help working people and strengthen our economy.
If the state legislature doesn't act on the issues by the end of July, the coalition will need to collect about 11,000 more signatures to secure their place on the ballot in November.
Andrea tells us increasing the minimum wage would raise the pay of almost a million Massachusetts workers. And the state of Georgia leading the way when it comes to making sure that preteens and teens in the state's foster care system are equipped with the tools to succeed in life. The Multi-Agency Alliance for Children was highlighted in a recent N.E. Casey Foundation report. Victoria Salzman, Program Director for Georgia Youth Opportunities Initiative, at the Alliance says the report underscores the practices already in place in the Peach State.
The things that we've been doing or know that we should do or is best practice, and this really gives us the reasoning behind it. If we look at it from a more macro or community level, there's a lot of impact on our general population and our community.
The Casey report emphasizes best practices such as training staff and foster parents on the role of trauma and racism and addressing the social stigmas that often come with being a child in foster care. More than 9 out of 10 Ohioans between 18 and 64 have health insurance. Suzanne Potter reports just over half get it from their employer.
Researchers at the private foundation focused on improving health have tracked where people get their insurance since 2006 and found that the rate of uninsured people is stabilizing. Kate Keller with Interact for Health says the state has made major progress.
So we're down to about 10%, which is about half of where we were prior to the ACA due to the expansion of Medicaid in Ohio, where we have about 750,000 people who now have insurance that didn't have it before prior to the Affordable Care Act passing.
Ohio fares slightly better than the nation as a whole, where 12% of adults 18 to 64 are uninsured.
And finally, word from Mark Richardson that 3 months after Hurricane Harvey hit southeast Texas, nearly half of the residents affected by the storm say they are not receiving the help they need to recover.
A joint survey by the Episcopal Health Foundation and the Kaiser Family Foundation finds that Black and Hispanic families were hit harder than others and report a much higher percentage of losses due to property damage and lost income. Elena Marks, president of the Episcopal Health Foundation, says they did the survey to find out where recovery funds might do the most good.
Philanthropy has been very, very generous, and hundreds of millions of dollars have been raised. We wondered how those people would know what to do with that money and how the agencies they might distribute it to would know who needed what kind of help.
The report also found that the storm has taken a toll on people's mental and physical health, with 6 out of 10 storm victims reporting they've skipped or postponed a doctor's appointment or had difficulty obtaining mental health care. That's our news for now. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.